Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. I met Adele Martinez a couple years ago in Los Angeles when she was a longtime bartender at the Black Cat in Silver Lake, which is a wonderful spot for a snack and a delicious cocktail. And then just a few months ago, I walked into a bar in Old Town San Diego, and there she was. I was so confused, but it was so wonderful because she'd relocated to San Diego and she's working at Tohono in Old Town, and she's going to be working at Polite Provisions. I couldn't wish more wonderful spots for her. So we sat down and talked about murder ballads, all things agave, cumbias, and more. So pour yourself a nice shot of mezcal to sip while we do the music and booze thing.
There we go.
So I always like to start these things by having you introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and where you work and, you know, stuff like that. We'll just get going.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Adele Martinez. I am a bartender. I actually just moved to San Diego like 4 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, something like that. But I used to be based out of LA, which is how Mo and I met at The Mermaid, which is really awesome. I am also a co-host of Talk Toes, a podcast, which I do with my heterosexual life partner, Shauna Race, who has been on this podcast before. That's kind of in a nutshell what I'm doing. I'm currently work at Tohono Bar, which is an agave concept here in San Diego. And I will very soon start working at Polite Provisions as well.
That's amazing. Yeah. How did you get into the polite world?
So, I mean, honestly, like it kind of just happened serendipitously because I was like, okay, like maybe I should like start looking for something else in addition to what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Mostly because, previous to coming to San Diego, I was also doing brand work for a mezcal company. So I was like, okay, it's a lot of agave. I want to get back into the trenches of like high volume, you know, bar situation, which is what I did for 7 years at the Black Cat in Silver Lake. Mm-hmm. And I kind of missed that. So I was like, okay, like I love working with agave. It's something that truly, you know, ignites my world. And I'm very, very passionate about it, but I do miss the loudness and the high volume and the late nights and stuff. So I was like, I'm ready for that again.
Yeah.
So I saw they were hiring and I was just like, okay, like, oh, this is a really great bar. I've known about this bar for a long time. It constantly gets accolades and they have a very solid program. So I went and put an application and I got the job. So I was like, yes,
pretty stoked.
Yeah. But, for people who don't know about San Diego, or maybe you're more like LA inclined, but San Diego is like Consortium Holdings. It's like kind of like the 213 of LA. Mm-hmm. They're just like a big, group that consistently puts out bars that are very awesome.
Do.
Yeah,
they really do. When I heard they took over the Bar Pink space, and RIP Bar Pink, because I loved that
RIP.
I loved that bar so much. My very first guest was actually Ami, one of the owners of that.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, she was my very first podcast. But I heard they were taking over that spot, and I was like, well, it's not going to be a dive bar, that's for sure. Yeah. But it'll have good drinks, you know, it'll have nice drinks there at least. They are very consistent, very good. And I know they're taking over the Lafayette Hotel.
They are. I just recently found that out. Yeah.
And I didn't
realize who they were until when I first moved here. And that being said, I'm very aloof to kind of the scene, although I've been in it for so long, but I'm just kind of unaware of a lot of things.
You also came down during pandemic.
I did, totally. So it was a little bit difficult to navigate for sure, but it was just kind of like, oh, like what bar should I check out? And it was like, you know, either lists, and there were certain bars that consistently were on those lists that were given to me by different people. Mm-hmm. And all of those lists had at least two or three, you know, consortium bars. Mm-hmm. And I never realized that they were the same group until I'm like, oh, I like this bar. I like this one. Oh, wait, they're all the same group.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. The consistency they have, you know, with what they do was really cool.
Yeah. That's amazing. And, Definitely a learning experience for sure, but a good one. I don't know. Totally. Who's ever regretted working for them. I've known people over the years who've worked there and they always love it.
I mean, I'm excited. And then, you know, like I said earlier, I did brand work during pandemic. I was a Black Cat for a very long time. That's home for me. Yeah. But with pandemic, you know, I was seriously going insane, staying at home and not working. So I was like, I need to do something. Like I was seriously going insane. And, you know, especially living in LA where you pay a lot of rent, but you pay rent for location, right? So I lived in a really cute, but tiny, tiny, tiny apartment in Mount Washington. Mm. And I loved it. It was really cool because we were walking
distance.
Oh, we
were neighbors. We didn't know each other well enough then.
I didn't realize that. Dang it.
Yeah, I'm just over the hill in Eagle Rock, you know?
Missed opportunity.
It's all right. There'll be more.
but you know, you can relate to this. You know, you pay this rent for a very small space, but you're in it. You're close to everything. Everything's so accessible to you. Stuff, there's venues, there's restaurants, there's bars. And then with pandemic, I was like, well, I have none of that, but I'm still paying the same rent. Why do I live in a shoebox and pay this amount of rent? Totally. So I was really going crazy. And then my fiance, he, because of obviously COVID, ended up working remotely. So we were both home like all day together. And I was just like, this would be a murder suicide very quickly. So I need to go do something.
And it makes me feel a little better to hear you say that. Cause I know you guys have been together for a decade.
Yeah.
And my husband and I have only been living in the same space for a couple of months. And I'm just like, this is hard.
Yeah, it really is, especially like for Scott and I
out in the world.
No, seriously, especially when you have like, you're so used to having like your life separate, you know what I mean? Like Scott always had like a 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And I, as a bartender,
so you had that time.
Yeah. So I had mornings were me time and he had his own time when I was at work. Mm-hmm. So, but then all of a sudden we're in a shoebox, like every single second together. We're two dogs. And I'm like, okay, this is not going to work out for me. So because of Black Cat, they had a great relationship with Mezcal Union. So they reached out to me.
Cool.
Yeah. And they were like, hey, like, you know, we're trying to do a big push for on-premise as well.
Yeah.
We don't have a brand rep. Would you like to try that out? And I was like, hell yeah. I've always been curious for brand work as is. I love Mezcal. I can talk about it all day. Yeah. And then, and I need to get out of this effing house. So yes, I would love to do that. So I started working for them and
you
I was
totally
really
swear
curious.
On this podcast, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. I wasn't sure. I was a pressure totally. That before.
Oh no. Just swear.
Yeah. But I was fucking going insane.
Yes.
So I started doing that and that was great. It was a great experience. And then when as things were starting to reopen with like, you know, outdoor dining and stuff, I simultaneously worked at Black Cat cause that's home for me. I really want to go back, but the experience was just so different. You know, I was like inside just making drinks, like not interacting with any of my regulars, all these things. It was so lackluster. And like, you know, as grateful as I was to be able to still be there and be around people that I love and have a deep connection with, it just sucked. And I'm like, this freaking sucks. And it wasn't the same. So, you know, eventually make the move down to San Diego. Mostly because I think the pandemic really got to our brains and just like, we got to do something with,
something
you know,
different.
Something different somewhere else. Like now we understand the value of sanctuary now, you know what I mean? Like now I understand that yeah, location is great and stuff, but like I need space. Yeah. So we yeah. moved down here. It's a little bit more affordable because LA is just kind of out of control.
Crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're able to get like, you know, a lot more space, less traffic. It's definitely like a smaller yeah. city, but I, so far I'm enjoying it a lot. And the scene here is very much different than LA, but it's been really fun to navigate mm-hmm. And kind of just put to test, right? What are the skills that I have that serve me here? And what skills do I need to learn to continue to grow as a bartender, which mm-hmm. has been really fun.
Well, when and did you start bartending?
I started about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I did the whole, you know, like I bluffed. I was like, yeah, I've definitely been a bartender before. And then go to your first day. And they're like, is that how you usually hold your bottles? And I'm like, oh,
yeah, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totes. It's my style. Yeah. And I first started at like a really, really, really shitty dive bar. You know, really
best place to learn. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah. I mean, that's where you
expectations are low.
That's, but you also like learn, to grow your a yeah. few extra inches of skin because yeah. it's rough, you know, it's, yeah. it was, and I'm, when I'm talking dive bar, I'm talking about the same old men came in every morning and I wore, you know, booty shorts and a tank top and they would mm-hmm. say the nastiest shit to me. And I had mm-hmm. to either, you know, laugh about it, which I didn't like, or I have to fucking come back with some sass mm-hmm. and they loved it and they loved me. And it was a mm-hmm. thing. Right. And that's mm-hmm. kind of how you learn. Then I moved to Orange County and I was there for a little bit. And, you know, that was when I had my first quote unquote craft cocktail experience, which yeah. is like back then it was like, oh my God, you make your own bitters? Wow. It's like the most basic shit. And you know, and it was just kind of like, yeah, we infused this gin with strawberries. Whoa. Like just kind of like that. But that gave me a lot more sense of like, or of being, take pride in what you're doing. Right. Yeah. And like, yeah. and like the wow factor and how it does make you feel good when you do something and people consider it so special. They want to take mm-hmm. pictures of it. They want to ask you about it. And you're like, oh yeah, this is cool. You know, no, and also mm-hmm. I don't have to wear booty shorts for this. It's kind of really yeah. awesome. Cool.
You grew out of the booty shorts.
Yeah, so. Totally. So that was my first experience like that. And then I ended up moving to LA and then I went, I don't know how they hired me at Black Cat because it's like a super like well put together program with mm. a lot of high volume. Like, yeah, you're hired. And I'm like, hell yeah. And then I was just like, mm. oh, I'm waiting over my head. But yeah. you know, that kind of made me kind of just like try harder. I mean, okay, mm. I gotta be faster. I gotta be yeah. quicker. I gotta be, you know, whatever. And I attribute Black Cat for a lot of the skills I'm
learning,
you know, yeah. Learning. Yeah. Of yeah. my true bones.
So, okay. We have to talk about music too.
Yes.
And so. I don't remember if you played music or not. Did you, or you DJed?
I never did.
You didn't do any of that stuff. You no. just love it.
I just love it. I'm very musically inclined, but I never played music.
For some reason
music.
I thought you DJed or something.
No, I just, you know, I always try to play music, but I'm like, I can't sit. One place long enough to like.
Did you have instruments that you tried to play?
And I then did. You, like, I about still it. Have a bass, and I just like I you know, they were just yeah. I'm gonna try this. I'm like watching tutorials and I'm trying to learn, and then I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna go do something else now. Bye. Like I just can't do it. But you know, my all of my siblings play instruments. I've always, you know, been around people who do. Like all my yeah. friends are in bands and stuff like that, and I've yeah. always really like. I think. When the pandemic hit, the thing that I missed the most was live music. Yeah. I can't like, it was like, seriously, like something was missing from my mm-hmm. soul. I actually just went to the first, well, I've been to like smaller gigs, like, you know, local bars and like local yeah. bands and yeah. stuff like that since then. But I went to the first big show that I've had tickets for a while for the first time last week. And it just mm-hmm. felt good. I was like,
what show did you go see?
I went to go see Amiga the Devil. And I saw him twice. I saw him at Solana Beach. And then I went up to the Terragram in LA okay. to go see him.
So it was
him.
At the Belly Up you saw him.
Then. Yes, at the Belly Up and then the Terragram. And they opened. I'm super into his music right now. It's kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He plays mm-hmm. kind of like, it's called Murder Folk. And it's like folk. He's an incredible musician. And he plays like banjo, but he only plays about like serial killers and really dark shit. But
there's a lot of that out there.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's really good. From the second I walked in, I planned my attack. Three packets in hand, I sat at my usual table and back. He might have been calling the numbers, but I was calling the shots. After four in a row, I jumped up and yelled, "Someone should call the cops! I'm killing it."
But it sounds like you went to the show and you came out okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. I mean, I'm vaccinated, but still, like,
do you have any other shows on your schedule?
Not because of my wedding. I haven't really planned it for anything.
That's right.
But I am going to go see Shannon and the Clams in October here at the Belly Up, which I'm really excited. It's one of my favorite bands. It's weird as you get older and, you know, you start gravitating towards different sounds, right? It's like, definitely, I prefer like the folkier, more melodic, maybe some dark lyrics for sure. Cause that's, you're never going to take that away from me, but definitely more like the surfish, like whatever. Mm-hmm. I just gravitate do up. I'm like really into those types of beats now. Mm-hmm. Something I really gravitate towards, but you know, it goes like in waves, you know, and I think it depends on like how I'm feeling at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just want like, all right, the classics, let's go back to metal, you know, let's go back to punk. And sometimes I'm like, ska, I feel like skanking all week today. Like it just really depends on like what you're going through. And
I had the Colombians in town. I was telling you, my family was visiting and I was like, okay, what are we listening to? And my cousin is like, cause she's about 10 years younger than I am and grew up mostly here in the States. And she's got two daughters with her who are 20 and 15. I'm like, they're going to be hip hop kids. Sure. They're gonna be hip-hop kids. And I was like, all right, so where do we agree? I think we can all agree on like, that. Let's just do like classic hip hop. So we were doing like 90s hip hop.
Love
R&B, and everybody was happy. You know, my husband, everybody was down. Yeah. Like, yay, there we go. This is going to work for the whole group.
Totally.
And it kind of cracks me up, the things that you can cross bridges with.
Totally. Know? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what, like, you know, I know you're talking about my wedding, but it's just like kind of taking over my personality right now.
Life. You can talk about
it. It really has. But like curating a playlist, our DJ was like, okay, give me a song of 50 songs that you want to play at your wedding, or like, and maybe kind of just to get an idea of what genre you like. And it's just like, okay, like, I'm not going to put a Black Sabbath playlist for my dance party. Like as much as I would like to do that, right? Like, no, it has to be like something that everybody likes. So it's like, okay, what's something that I'm okay with having at my own wedding, cause I'm paying for this DJ, but also that everybody else would like, and it's typically older songs, you know, it's a lot of like, you know, Michael Jackson and Madonna and like, you know,
Fire.
Exactly.
And I will tell you, we had Fugazi on our playlist.
Ooh, so we're doing a lot of like, a lot of Queen and like, you know, 80s, like Depeche Mode and stuff like that. We're doing some like, and then also like, you know, it's a bicultural wedding. It's like half of my family is Mexican and they don't speak any English, and Scott's family, they're from California. They don't speak any Spanish, super white. So I'm like, okay, what are the two?
Where's it going to cross?
You know, it's a journey. Of course you have to have a journey and like shit like that. You know what I mean? That like, maybe I don't have in my playlist for my road trips, but I know that I can have a good time with it. And also,
and they will too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you ever in your cocktail world, have you ever named a cocktail after a song lyric or been inspired by like a band? Like, did you do any like dark, did you ever have the opportunity? Black Cat, I think, was kind of set in their ways.
Yes. Black Cat was very streamlined. Like there was and you know, and I appreciated that about them because it was just like, we're too high volume to start doing this like super, I guess, quote unquote crafty shit. It's just like classics and we're going to do them good. And we're going to do them like fast.
Oh, yeah.
That's
our
thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I respect, but I think, where my creative, like, you know, things come in, it's always like with competitions. And I always think of either a performer or a song. I've done cocktails based off of like a Chavela Vargas. I've done cocktails with that. I've done cocktails and it was like a green pepper, I forgot what it was in there, but it's like a green pepper smoky cocktail because she always says like, soy como el chilito verde picoso pero sabroso, like shit like that, you know. I've done some like Frank Sinatra, and I did like a, like from what's the song with the honeymoon? Like, come fly with me.
Come fly with me.
There you go. Yeah. I did one which is like, I only use ingredients that were like considered exotic, you know, from like, you know, for, like tropical and islands and stuff like that. Cause you're going on a honeymoon. Like stuff like that. And that's usually the things I do for like competitions. And that's because I can really stop and like, and because in competition settings, you get to talk about it. So you get to explain, it doesn't get missed. The details don't get missed on people versus maybe something on a cocktail menu, unless it's like really, really like you call it like, you know, something very, very forward, then it might get missed on people. But the
how often have you done competitions?
I've entered quite a few. It's just something, and honestly, I just do it for me, like more so like I'm not a very competitive person, but like I do them for me in the sense like, okay, like this is fun. Like if I don't have a creative outlet in the sense that like I work at programs that don't really require me to come up with things like that, it's a really fun thing to do. And just being like, you know, in this industry for so long, I'll have the reps from that brand hit me like, hey, you should enter this. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, that sounds fun. You know, I didn't realize how big of a thing it can get until I got a place for Patron. I did the Perfectionist. They like they flew me out to Portland. And I was just like, I'm just here for the free drinks and the good times. And then I realized I really took it super serious. And I'm like, oh shit! Like,
there's some kinda, people that they like they that's what they do. You know, they're at their bar, but they are doing that, and they're like, this is how I see the world. This is how I learn. This is how I do stuff. Is I just enter these competitions, and that seems exhausting to me.
It is. But I.
Yeah, it was exhausting to you as well.
I was just like, oh, damn, you brought sand from Hawaii for garnish? Shit. I just borrowed the glassware that was at the bar already because I didn't even bring my own fucking glassware. It was kind of like that. That was a great learning experience, but I realized this might not be for me, like not to that extent.
Yeah, but I will
say that, you know, I do love the storytelling and much like, why I gravitate lately to like folkier songs is because they all tell a story. Mm-hmm, and I think that's why I like competitions as well. It's just, I like stories and I love how you get a space to tell that story, which realistically in a bar setting, you don't get that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially if you're 3D, here's your drink. Like I'm not going to sit here and explain to you what it is.
Yeah.
Unless it's really slow and there's nobody else at the bar, but it's just the nature of the beast. You know, and I think competitions are much like.
It's funny you're talking about stories because that's the other thing you do. You're talking to me on a whole pro setup because you have worked on this podcast too.
Yes.
You guys have done cocktails as well.
Yes.
We did have Shauna on just before the summer, I think. So we had her on. It's like bookending now, you know?
Yeah. My wifey. Yes. I've been doing, we're doing podcasts, doctors for about 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And this is all, you know, it's out of Shauna's brand because she's like an incredible human being. And she's just such the way she wanted to go about it. But the podcast was pretty genius, but she was just like, hey, I just feel like we constantly hear about these bars. You hear about, you know, Three Dots and a Dash and Death and Co. and Employers Only, whatever, like super crazy, you know, polite provisions,
even same bars over and over
about like how amazing they are. And with all due respect, they are incredible bars and
they're reasons.
Cool shit. Mm-hmm. Yes. But these bars wouldn't be anything without their bartenders. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like we seldom hear names of bartenders.
Yeah.
So it's more like her whole thing was like, how can we give a highlight to the bartenders? And specifically the bartender stories, because we all have them. Like working behind the bar really puts you in such close quarters with humanity.
Yeah.
And humankind and how great it can be, how bad it can be, how hilarious it can be, how disgusting it can be. It all goes together. So we all have stories. So she has this idea like, hey, why don't we just interview bartenders from not just like crazy famous, like whatever, not every bartender, whether you work at a Applebee's or whether you're, you know, of Bardashian and have a million followers on Instagram, doesn't matter. We want the stories from everybody. And we started collecting these and you know, this is a passion project and will always be a passion project no matter what. And we've always said that when it ceases to be fun, we'll stop doing it. But it has grown into a way bigger thing than we thought it was going to be. And it's always been fun. And we have met so many incredible people in this journey. And when pandemic hit, it became very difficult to navigate because it was something that we did in person. And it's a lot of like reading each other, eye contact and stuff like that. And Zoom now, I mean, after a year and a half of this, we're used to it now.
Because I used to travel a lot and I always did mine on site. You know, if I could get down to San Diego, I'd be like, girl, we're sitting at Tohono and we're doing this there. You know?
Right.
That having that sound is really great. You know, all that ambient stuff is wonderful.
Yes.
And it's tougher to do these days.
It is. And I'm sure you can relate that when you first started via Zoom, you feel like it felt weird. You're like, am I really connecting? Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of that. So we eventually got used to pivot a little bit our theme of the podcast a little bit, but it's always been with bartenders. It's always been about stories. And just kind of highlighting this person and trying to give them a space to promote themselves. Mm-hmm. I would say the silver lining about doing this during pandemic and working with Zoom and stuff like that is that now we have a really big reach. You know, maybe we can talk to people from the East Coast, from the Midwest, from the comfort of our home. And like I moved to San Diego and we're still able to record, which is amazing. And it's something that we're really glad that, you know, there was a silver lining and we can still do it, but it's been an incredible journey and it's been just above everything, like fun. It's just fun to connect and fun to like really, you know, create this community. And, you know, and there are many, many podcasts out there about the industry. They're really awesome and really educational and really, you know, amazing content and whatnot. But us is just, we don't really take like we don't take it so serious. We want to, And sometimes, you know, when you're in the industry, and I'm sure you can relate to it, you start talking about work and then it becomes like complaining and like talking about the negatives, right? And it's like a form of vent, right?
Yeah, we all do it.
But we try to kind of steer away from that a little bit and just kind of like, let's just be funny.
And
like,
get
just,
the or, stories.
And just get mm-hmm. the stories and like kind of make fun of it and like just kind of like remind ourselves that we do, although it can get a little difficult to navigate, mm-hmm. like we do mm-hmm. love what we do. And it's mm-hmm. just like a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know, and Shauna, she's such a bodacious, like just, she's such a funny girl. It's really fun. I'm really grateful.
You know, stuff like that. I mean, it's just a reminder that hospitality is community. It's founded on community and creates a community within itself. You know, it's about creating a community for someone to come in and get away from their everyday. You know, just have a little bit of an escape, whether it's they need some downtime or they want to have fun or whatever it is. You know, you sort of are cultivating that little environment for them.
Yeah, totally.
Or it's third space, be stories. Right? It is totally the third space. Yeah. And there's always going to be some stories there. And sure, you got to vent because sometimes people are not cool.
Yeah. Sometimes people are not cool.
No, we're all like, mm-mm. Yeah, there are so many stories, but then there are also wonderful people that you get to meet through that as well. So it's kind of like for every like anti-vaxxer that we've got these days or something, you know, there is someone who comes in there that is just like, I love what you do. I'm so glad you're open. Thank you so much. You know, you still get that too. So you just have to grab onto those things. It's crazy.
100%.
How has Tahona been treating you since you've been down there?
I mean, I love it. It's funny because I, you know, when you came in, I was like, Mo, and you're like, oh my God. It was so much fun.
I feel like this is a story we should tell people. Like, you know, I'm from San Diego, which I say from time to time. And we were down there for Father's Day. That's what it was.
Right.
Down to see my dad. But, you know, we spend a day with my dad and then the husband and I go like drink, you know, wander around. And I'm like, we're going to do Old Town for a day. Cause I actually have always loved Old Town and there are these little gems within Old Town. And I had read about Tahona and I'm like, I want to check this place out. And that was the last place we went. Cause we're like, we could eat there and walked in. And yeah, you were like, Mo. And I'm like, wait, what? It's like, I forgot where I was.
Yeah. You're like, wait, am I in LA right now? Yeah.
I know. I was so disoriented at first. Like this happens sometimes. I'm like, wait. And then you're like, I moved here. I'm like, oh my God, Adela's here now. And we had so much fun there. I mean,
that was,
you and also your boss was it, Carlito. Carlito, like he's little.
Carlo, shout out.
Yeah, there you go. He was so much fun and just the whole vibe there was really great. And I loved that it was in Old Town, but I also loved it for you, at least at that time, because, you're back there. You're in charge. You're doing your thing, but you also got to go home kind of early.
Yes. Which is like the perfect, kind of like ease in back into the, you know, because
it's a restaurant and they close.
Yes. Like, they close early and Old Town specifically closes like earlier Old Town than most restaurants.
Old Town is shut down by
10 PM. There's nobody there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely been great. You know, come home and I'm like, even on the busiest week and night, I'll be home by midnight at the latest. I'm like, this is nice. You know, and I do miss some late nights, but it's been really nice. It's going to definitely go into a different bar that's open till 2. It's going to be an adjustment.
I'm excited to
start doing it again, but it's going to be I'm going to have a few days of like, I'm really tired because my sleep schedule is like messed up.
Yeah.
But no, I love Tahona. I believe that in this city is the best agave concept bar none. Like it's
the best one I've seen so far.
The selection that we have, the amazing brands that we carry, all this like really, really cool stuff and what they're doing towards a, you know, agave, it's amazing. And, you know, it is an Old Town, which is a little bit difficult to navigate as far as the demographic goes, because it's a lot of restaurants, it's, you know,
tourists. And
what do you mean you don't have a $5 margarita? What do you mean you don't have queso dip? You know what I mean? It's like, no, we're definitely not that, you know? And I mean, we don't even have flour tortillas, which is like in Old Town, it's like flour tortillas are the thing, right?
Yeah.
So like,
well, so unless a lady makes you your corn tortilla.
Right.
You know, you see those ladies make you corn. Then you'll have that.
So, you know, it's been definitely like, but I do know that the people who make the trip to Tahona, it's because they like mezcal and they want to talk about mezcal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really love the educational part about working in an agave concept. You know what I mean? And like everything as you know, nerdy as like, what's the weirdest shit you have behind your back bar? And I'm like, oh, let me show you versus like what's the difference between tequila and mezcal, whatever questions. I love them all. Like, I love,
I had no idea that it was going to be as serious an agave place as it was. And I walked in there and I'm like, oh, there's Sotol. Oh, there's Ricia. Oh my gosh.
They're like, okay. Like, oh, they're real.
I used to in San Diego only get Bacanora from our neighbors who they'd go down to Mexico to visit their family and bring it back, and they'd smuggle it back because it wasn't legal for so long.
Yes. And,
these are family friends that we grew up with who, let's see, the parents emigrated or came over like in the 60s or something. So they have property in Mexico. I don't remember where. And they'd go home and, you know, hang out with the family. And then they'd get Bacanora and put it in old tequila bottles and reseal it and then bring it back.
That's hilarious.
So I remember like at the holidays, we'd go over there Christmas Eve and have some Christmas Eve with them. And the patriarch would always be like, oh, Monica, I know you like this. Cause I was the one that drank all of that. My dad's like, when did you start drinking this? I'm like, you don't want to know, Dad. It was a long time.
Don't ask.
Yeah. So when did you realize agave was, you know, cause you, I'm, agaves are my thing as well.
That's I love them. Ironically enough,
and it's always been that way for me. They've always been my favorite.
I think I started like immediately gravitated towards agave for a multitude of reasons. But once I started drinking spirits neats, that's all I want to drink, right? Like, because I used to be more into cocktails. Now I more definitely prefer, I always order like something neat, and it's always agave. But I think it's a weird story because I grew up in Mexico and I grew up in North Mexico. I grew up in Baja California, Mexicali, very close to. Yeah. San Diego, 2 hours, maybe east, southeast.
Did you say you were in Mexicali? Or you
Mexicali.
Uh-huh. Oh, you grew up there.
Okay. I grew up there. Yeah. So very close to here, but you know, in North Mexico, mezcal specifically is not, it wasn't a thing.
No.
It didn't become a thing until it became big in the States, which is very ironic to me. Mm-hmm. It was seen as something less than, it was seen as like what, you know,
it was
lack of a better term, what the peasants drank, you know. So I always, like, growing up in Mexicali, what you would do when you had a show, like you would throw particular shows or parties or whatever, and you would fill up this giant cooler like jug with the shittiest mezcal you can find, which is like in a plastic and a plastic
cans. Yeah, no, I've seen those.
It was called mezcalito, and then you put it in the thing, and then you add Tang. You know, the Kool-Aid.
Oh my
the
god,
Tang,
really? Oh yeah,
and
no,
water.
My brother and my dad still drink Tang.
Yep, so. It's a thing. So you put it
Tang
with that shitty mezcal and a bunch of ice and water, and you call it agua loca. And you would give it for free. And that's how you get people to come to your shows.
Party. Oh
yes. And it was usually music shows you know, you would go to somebody's and like do the music shows or like that for their parties. And then people would go and get fucked up. So that was my image of mezcal. Right. So then when I started bartending in a more proper cocktail bar.
Yeah.
You know,
mezcal was appearing.
Yeah, it was mezcal. It was Del Maguey, right? Vida. Mm-hmm. That was like the thing then. And I was like, who the fuck? You're charging how much for mezcal? Like, what the fuck? It kind of like, I couldn't wrap my brain around it.
Yeah,
And I tried it. It was, oh, it's just so smoky. I don't like it. You know, whatever. And then as, you know, once I started working, you know, moved to LA, I realized how much people loved it. And I was like, interesting. Like, and then we had a few bottles in the back bar that were really cool. So I started kind of like, you know, intrigued, and I started drinking and I was like, this is fucking delicious. And of course, and it started with cocktails, right? And I always say that mezcal cocktails are the gateway drug to become a mezcal nerd, right? At least unless you're from, you know, South Mexico, where mezcal is being produced. And yes, that's something that's in your culture. You've been doing it your entire life. But for people like me that are from the North, whatever, people in this country, you start with a mezcal margarita and then it's like, you know, you never turn back. And then eventually next
thing you start learning,
like, yes,
there's so much to learn about the mezcals
because
there's so many different variations there.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just like, you know, it doesn't have to be smoky all the time. It doesn't have to taste like gasoline.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, there's you can deep dive into the weirdest shit and it's amazing. And so, and the more you learn about it, the more you realize you don't know anything about it, which makes it that much more fun, totally. But, or, you know, intriguing. I've always liked tequila. You know, it's something that you, it's almost like innate. Since you turn 18, you start drinking tequila. Mm-hmm. You know, I've lived in California since I was 19. Everybody fucking drinks tequila.
Always drinking tequila. So,
yeah, it's always like something that's been like there. And, mm-hmm. you know, even where I'm from, tequila has been a thing. It's just something that's ever present. It's so that's never, you know, been a thing. You
is
know,
it kind of funny that the agaves are almost like comfort food in a way.
Yes,
it is for me too. Because I grew up in San Diego. So, I mean, the border was right there. Yeah. We were down all the time. And I remember going to Colombia when I was old enough to drink. And my cousins there knew that I liked tequila, but they don't have tequila there. All they have is aguardiente. You know, and they have rum, aguardiente and beer. And even then, rum wasn't that much of a thing there either, you know? So I remember one of my cousins, she's a lawyer. She like got from her boss, who was like district attorney type or something.
High power lawyer, man.
Yeah, he was able to get a bottle of like Milagro. Okay. So that she brought that for New Year's. I was having New Year's and that was what we were going to drink for New Year's. And they were all like, we want to try it. We've never had tequila. I was like, how have you never had tequila? This was like in 2009 or something.
Oh, wow.
And I remember I'm like, well, let's just do shots. It's the easy way to do it. And I remember that my uncle, we did the whole like salt lime thing. Let's just do this. Easy way to do it. So let's just do that. You can have a little bit this way. And I remember that my uncle, who's like, he's probably like 90 something now. He just looked at me and got a big smile on his face. And he was like, all right. Like he was totally into it.
I love it.
And I'm like, yeah, well, you guys sit there and drink aguardiente by the bottle. They literally just buy a bottle of aguardiente and a giant beer. And then we'll watch like salsa shows and drink, do a shot, drink some beer, do a shot, drink some beer all night long. So I'm like, I know you guys can handle this.
The aguardiente I'm a big fan of like, whatever they drink here, I want to drink that. Let's drink that. Mm-hmm. And you know, every bar that you go to, they'll be like, do you want a bottle of aguardiente? And I'm like, yes. And I was all stoked in it. I didn't love it, but I was like, fuck it. No. We're here. We're going to eat this and we're going to drink that.
Drink it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And towards the end of my trip, I'm like, I never want to see a bottle of this aguardiente
again.
I still like have a bottle at home and I have it for, you know, for nostalgic purposes.
I've had a couple that don't suck, but they're also not great. And you know, I'm just like, I'm just gonna make some drinks out of it. I can make stuff out of it, you know. I'm just having fun with it.
Going back to the comfort food that you're saying, I agree, because when I go to like a really, really, really awful dive bar, they always have tequila, and that's kind of like, well, I mean, I can at least have that.
Yep,
like,
totally.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. So I can do that. We're good. As long as tequila, I can do that. But you know, just it's mezcal, you know, as the more, again, the more you learn about it, the more, you know, you don't realize anything, the more you want to know. And then you start, you know, first with the nerdy things of like flavor profiles and how is it made, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you start asking about, you know, the stories again with the storytelling, you know, much like, you know, the music that I gravitate to, I just love stories. And I want to ask who's making it, what's the story behind it, what's the tradition behind this.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really, really gets me about it. Story. I love stories.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We've had other mezcali types on here before, like Max, Maxwell Rice, you know, he is mezcal guy.
I love him.
We all love him.
Who doesn't like him?
He's so funny. but he, was also, you know, he gave us this, make sure you look, see if the thing is signed by the mezcalero.
Exactly.
You want to see where it came from, because then you know, you're getting something that means something, you know, it's almost like wine in a way.
Yes.
You
know, basically. Yeah. You know, I love him. He, to me, and I've told this to his face many times, especially when I'm with him, like, I love you so much. I respect him so much because he has so much integrity and he looks for those things. And that's important. Yeah. And that's important to, it's important to relay that information to people, like, hey, like, you love the spirit. Do you really? Then fucking pay attention.
Learn this. Yeah. Learn this stuff important. About it.
If you really love it, pay attention and make sure you vote with your dollar. Like, cause ultimately that's
if
really
you vote
important.
For your dollar, you'll continue getting quality stuff.
Exactly.
Otherwise, and, you know, you'll lose it. It'll all just become.
And you'll lose the stories.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So it's really important for sure. And that's kind of like my favorite thing about it. And working at Tohono, I have access to a lot of those beautiful spirits that otherwise I wouldn't be able to have access to, you know, that we have batches that are only made for us, are really special.
I need to get back down there.
You do. When you do, just let me know. I have a lot of special stuff to share with
you. I'll make sure that I will do it after your wedding.
Yes. Right now I am.
That's all that is off your mind.
I'm so stressed.
I'll ask you one more question before we wrap this thing up. And that is, okay, so when you have a down moment, which I don't know how many of those you have these days. But when you do chill down, when you do chill out, are you having, what are you drinking neat and what are you listening to?
Woo! okay. Chilled out as in like, I'm about to like wrap my day up, or chill out as
could
in
be
like,
that.
Just accomplish something, or chill either out one. As in like, I'm getting sometimes ready it's to like, get crazy.
No, I'm going to go with that. You've wrapped up your day.
Okay.
Let's do that. You're just sitting down and you're taking a breather. You're just like, I need to relax right now. What are you going to drink? What are you going to listen to?
Dang, that changes a lot. But right now.
Yeah, right now.
Right now, I would honestly say that I would probably get, I'm like really into the, there's a bottle that I have in my cover, the Traicilla, that's super cheesy. Really enjoying drinking that neat right now because it's like, I can't drink it fast. Such a bold flavor that I need to stop and like dissect it kind of, like as I take really small sips of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm really into Amigo the Devil right now. That's all I listen to because it's very. Well,
so what is it that you're drinking though?
Raicilla.
Oh, it's a Raicilla. Okay. Yeah, what?
Yeah. I'm specifically drinking La Venenosa.
Okay.
La Sierra de Tigre de Jalisco, which is an orange label. Mm. And it's so cheesy. It literally tastes like Cheetos. And I love Cheetos.
I love Cheetos. I love crunchy
like,
Cheetos.
But you know what I mean? Like something so cheesy and so funky. It's not something you're going to like.
Yeah.
Down.
You can't drink it fast.
You know what I mean? Like if it was like, okay, I'm getting pumped up, then I'm like drinking like a daiquiri.
I was going to say, like, okay, so what's something your
like, I would do probably like a daiquiri and something super dancey, like either a cumbia or a reggaeton right now. Cause I'm like, all right, I want to down this and it's fucking go time. You know what I mean? Like kind of like
you got to tell me your cumbia people, because see, again, my family's Colombian. So when we were talking about like mezcal being the peasant drink or the drink of the poor communities, cumbias were that for decades.
I mean,
cumbias were the music right now, of the like ghettos, you know?
Yeah. People, I mean, like kind of still is. There are a lot of like contemporary artists, you know, really famous, like, you know, really big artists. Yeah.
Cumbias are starting to play over, though.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
In a lot of rhythms, and there are a lot of crossovers, but think about the concept that it had to be in some kind of crossover for it to get mainstream, because the people that are playing cumbia for decades have always been seen like, it's in Mexico, the same thing. Cumbia is kind of like the music of the poor, right? Mm-hmm. But now you have this like contemporary, super like hipster artist, for a lack of a better term, whitesicans that are starting to play cumbia, and all of a sudden it's cool, right?
Well, when it happened in South America was, I want to say it was in the mid 2000s, early 2000s, when Argentina got a hold of cumbias and they started doing these electro cumbias, and Argentinians, I'm gonna be so South American right now, but Argentinians are the snobbiest people.
I'm not from South America, and they are super snobby. Nobody likes them.
My mom used to always say, and I've known Argentinian people who are perfectly fine, so we'll just say that. And their steak is top notch. But I will say, my mom used to always say that there was a saying which I don't know in Spanish, and of course it sounds better in Spanish, but it is Argentinians are people who speak Spanish, eat Italian, and think they're French.
Yeah.
And that was the
You didn't hear what the president said earlier, like a few months ago
of Argentina.
No, he said our people in Argentina, we what did he say? We came in boats. We weren't here. And there's a really funny meme of the indigenous people from Argentina, like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The only people I know who shuffled over there were all the Nazis. Sorry,
dude. No, it's true that our people came in boats, but it's true, like they all have a lot of pride of their European descent. There's a lot of, you know, and granted, like I'm not talking about Argentinians,
but I know
a lot of my favorite musicians come from Argentina, like Fabuloso Cadillac, Soda Stereo. They're like one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, absolutely. They have great music. But they took cumbias and they elevated the cumbia, right?
Elevated, quote unquote. Uh-huh.
So who are some of your cumbia artists?
So I can
listen to some
Sonora
of these.
Dinamita has always been like a big one. Yeah. Celso Piña, I really love. There's a lot of like bands that I love that will make a cumbia like song that I'm always like Mon Laferte has put out some fantastic cumbia songs.
Oh, that's
and I'm
cool.
Just like, yeah, really cool shit. Caifanes, you know, that the Negra Tomasa, their cumbia version is insane. Like stuff like that. It's just like familiar and dancey, and it sounds like, you know, a quinceañera or like, I'm just
that's
like, all
the
right.
Thing. Like cumbia always sounds like a party.
It does.
It always sounds like a party.
When I'm getting pumped up, I want something with citrus. That I'm going to drink very fast, and I want to get in this dancing mood, and it's typically with a cumbia, and I'm like, yeah, all right, like I'm ready. I'm trying to mellow out. It has to be something really funky, really higher proof to something really mellow with an acoustic guitar.
And I'm just like, very nice. I think I can relate to all of that, actually.
Yeah.
Well, let's tell people where they can find you. if they want to find you, if you want to be found.
Yes, come find me, please.
After the wedding,
you can come find me. Yeah, after the wedding. Right now, I'm too busy, neurotic. But
come to the end of September or something like that.
Yeah. I'm at Tahona Bar in Old Town San Diego. I will soon start at Polite Provisions in Northwark in San Diego. I also, again, I co-host a podcast with my best friend, Shauna Race. It's Talk Tales, the podcast, Instagram, iTunes. things. and you can find me on Instagram. My username is psychedelic, but it's spelled like a pun because my name is ADHEL, but you can just type in my name, Adele Martinez, ADHEL Martinez, and you'll find me. And yeah, but thank you so much for having me.
It was super awesome.
Thank you.
Don't go away, but I'm so glad that we finally got to talk. I mean, I have a feeling we're two of those people that whenever we're in the same room, the conversation will go and go and go.
Yes. I love it. Yes.
We got these white guy husbands who are going to be like,
they should be friends.
Yeah. They should totally be friends. I'll have something to do.
Yes.
Qué lindo es tu cucú, tan bello tu cucú, redondito y suavecito. Qué lindo es tu cucú, cuando te pones pantalón y te toca por detrás, se me suelta el corazón y te quiero más y más, 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 más. No me canso de mirar.
So yeah, Adele rules. Look her up on the Instagram at psychedelic, and it's spelled a little funny, so maybe look up Adele Martinez, ADHEL. Go check her out if you're in San Diego and you're doing the tourist thing. Go to Old Town and pop by Tahona, because it's not really a tourist spot, but it's right there in all the touristy stuff. I do love Old Town, the tourist stuff and the not tourist stuff. And Polite Provisions. If you know your cocktails, you know Polite Provisions is always a stop in San Diego. So follow her on the Instagram and you can probably find out where she's at in the next couple of weeks anyway. So thanks so much, Adele. You rule. That was really fun. And now I just feel the need to drink some tequila or something. So I'm going to go take care of that. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com, and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.